You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Greetings, everyone. Coach Jen here, and thanks for tuning in to Horse Tip Daily, episode 1607, brought to you today by Horse and Rider On Demand. This time, we join Horses in the Morning co-hosts Jamie and Glenn as they chat with Dr. Dustin Major about enteroliths.
Horse and Rider On Demand allows you to train smarter, not harder. Our training video collection featuring some of the industry's top Western professionals like Bud Lyon, Cody Crowe, Ryan Rushing, and more can help you perfect your horsemanship and improve your performance in the arena. Get access to hundreds of videos and learn more about events like ranch horse versatility, reining, working cow horse, ranch riding, and more for just $14.99 a month. Watch anywhere, anytime. Horse and Rider On Demand can be streamed from any smart device. Visit ondemand.horseandrider.com to start your 7-day free trial. That's ondemand.horseandrider.com.
This Horse Health Report is brought to you by Daily Dose Equine Non-GMO Core Nutrition for horses and ponies of all ages. I would like to welcome to the show Dr. Dustin Major from Texas A&M. And hi, Doc. How are you?
Doing great. How are y'all?
Fantastic. You're just right down the road from me. I'm in Oklahoma, and we're going to talk about something that we don't see a lot of, really, I don't think a lot of here, but when I was in Arizona and California, there's a big problem with them, and those are enteroliths. So first of all, tell me a little bit about what you do at Texas A&M.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on. First of all, I've actually listened to y'all's podcast a few times and really enjoyed it. So I'm happy, honored to be on. And
okay, so I have to ask him, if you hadn't enjoyed it, would you still have come on?
I'm Southern, so I would have told you it was great. And
then he would have said, bless your heart.
So we really don't know if he did enjoy it. He's just being polite at this point.
Yeah, the mystery is what's intriguing, right?
All right. Well,
yeah, so I work at Texas A&M University. I'm a clinical assistant professor here in large animal surgery, and my specialty is in equine soft tissue surgery. So that's my primary clinical load here, and then I do a lot of teaching and then kind of a minimal amount of research, but that's my main gig.
So the Texas A&M, your hospital is a teaching hospital?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. We're a 4-year institution with a large teaching hospital, both small and large animal. And then we also have, farm animal services and all that kind of stuff as well.
Well, start getting all the vets out you can. We need them, certainly.
Yeah. It's a big problem where it's something we talk about all the time, especially in equine. It's how do we get more students interested, get them into it, and keep them into it, for a career. There's a lot of initiatives going towards that, believe it or not, but it's going to be a long process.
Well, we appreciate what you do for sure. And so tell us a little bit about when we're going to talk about enteroliths, and Glenn had no idea what that was. So pretend you're talking to Glenn, who knows nothing about nothing.
He doesn't have to pretend he is talking to
him. Pretend it's him asking, what is an enterolith?
Yeah, well, Glenn, enteroliths is just a fancy word for a stone made in the intestine. Entero means intestine, lith means stone. And so horses have this weird ability to be able to make essentially stones in their large colon. And large colon, when you look at it in the animal, it's about as tall as I am. So I'm 5'10", and it's about as tall as I am doubled over. So it's a huge organ. And the last part of it before it transitions to the small colon is even bigger. So that's called the right dorsal colon. So in that larger chamber, you get some little nidus, a rock, a stick, a piece of a lead rope, something like that, that then it starts to lay mineral around, kind of like a pearl. And then it continues to do that layer by layer until you have a rock that is big enough to cause an obstruction. So it gets stuck as it transitions from the larger chamber of the right dorsal colon into the smaller chamber of the small colon. And that's when we start to see problems. Does that answer your question, Glenn?
Yeah, it's funny.
I'm looking at pictures. It doesn't look like a pearl to me. There's nothing pearl-looking about these things.
Maybe if you put a pearl in a bunch of horse feces for a couple of years, it might look the same, but
Yeah, it's not a, but it's fascinating. It's not, certainly not beautiful. So when your horse has an interlith, how are you supposed to know that?
Yeah, that's the problem. They're very insidious. So they don't tend to cause a problem until either they get stuck as they transition into that smaller piece of intestine, or they get so heavy that they actually sort of weigh down the intestine, can actually like eat through the lining. They can be so heavy, but it does have to be really big. And usually you're going to notice problems before that. But generally speaking, we only find them when the horse starts to show signs of colic. So then we do our workup and then go through the list of things that we do to work up colic. And then we eventually find them. And generally speaking, the only way to really diagnose them is through abdominal x-rays, which is not something that we commonly do in our workup. Most horse people have had a horse that has colic at some point, right? We come out, we pass a tube, we do a rectal, get some Banamine. Most of the time they get better. These tend to just kind of recur. And then finally we get back into doing x-rays, and then that's when we find the stone.
Gotcha. Yeah. I had a horse growing up who, when I lived in Georgia, had one, and I just realized that you went to UGA to do your undergrad. That's where my go dog. Yeah. That's where my horse had his interlith removed is at okay. UGA. Yeah.
So wow. That's cool.
Pretty small. That's why I said, Glenn, he said, if he doesn't like the podcast, he'll just say, it was great. Bless your heart. He's a Georgia boy. That's what we do.
Exactly.
So tell us all a little bit about where are these the most common? Like what part of the country?
That's a great question. They are higher. We see much higher incidence of them in California and Arizona.
Oh.
There's a couple of reasons for that, we think. There is a higher, there's a sort of a different mineral content in the soil there, for one. The sand tends to be, and dirt tends to be like a finer grain. And then also there seems to be more calcium in that environment. And so the other thing is, which I'm sure we'll get to, is the prevalence of feeding alfalfa is more common out there. And so those are where we tend to see a higher incidence of them.
The prevalence of, sorry, you broke up for a second there. The prevalence of what?
Of the interliths. So prevalence of like these interliths is higher in California and Arizona.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's why I went toward Alamo Pintado in California, and they have like just shelves of interliths that they have removed. And then they're like badges of honors. They've got like little plaques on them. So do you guys have that at Texas A&M as well?
We do. Yeah. They're not as common here, but we definitely see them. And so, yeah, we've got some of the major players here in like a display case at the front desk for interested parties.
I'm going to regret this because I always do.
I knew you were going to do it.
So what's the biggest one you've ever found?
Yeah. So the biggest one I'm thinking out is about 20 centimeters, which is about 10 inches. So, you know, if you think about maybe not quite a volleyball, but almost that size.
Oh dear.
And it was bouncing around in there?
Yes, and it's heavy. You know, when you take that thing out of there, it's several pounds, you know, that's weighing down inside the intestine. And
that poor horse had a stomach ache for years.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Think of like a bowling, the weight of a small bowling ball, if you've ever been bowling, right? If you pick up one that's light for you, that's about the weight of these. So they're substantial. they're completely solid all the way through.
So this is a surgical thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the only way to resolve these. There's no, you know, when people hear stones and that sort of thing, they think of like kidney stones and that kind of stuff. Those you can break down with lasers and sound waves and those sorts of things. There's some fancy ways to do that. But with these interliths are so large that and there's no way to get to them with any of these other modalities. So the only way to get them out is through surgery.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right.
Enjoy your lunch, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. The good news is, though, the prognosis for surgery is actually like excellent. Typically, if they don't have other, you know, pathology that we find when we do our abdominal explore, if we're just taking the stone out and we're able to get it out without any issues, then they typically do quite well afterwards.
It doesn't do damage to the lining of the intestine?
It can. So some of these really heavy ones, if the horse is colicking for a while and that sort of thing, and it gets in sort of a weird place as it gets stuck there, it can inflame the lining of the intestine and the wall of it, especially where it gets stuck. But generally speaking, once you kind of relieve the obstruction, the intestine actually has a really great ability to kind of bounce back. So it's quick to injury, but it's like reparative mechanisms are always online because it's always got a ton of bacteria that it's sort of cycling out and that sort of thing. So that inflammation usually subsides pretty quickly and they can do well. But there are some rare cases where it can like erode through the wall of the intestine and that sort of thing. So you might find cases of that if you were to do a Google search, which I may or may not recommend. but those are by far the outliers, if that makes sense.
So is there, I mean, because like we're just, you know, constantly every Wednesday when we have health segments, we just basically tell our listeners ways horses try to kill themselves. So is there a way to prevent this? Is there some sort of way to keep them from starting to form a pearl?
Yes, there actually is something you can do about it. And it all comes down to dietary management. So at UC Davis, where they see a lot of these enteroliths because it's so prevalent in California, they found that if you feed more than 50% of your horse's diet as alfalfa, and that's alfalfa hay, pellets, whatever form, then they're at an increased risk of developing these enteroliths because they're high in calcium, the enteroliths, and that comes from the alfalfa, essentially.
Yeah. So my time in Arizona, that was kind of one of the big things was like, don't feed your horses more than 50% alfalfa. And I see here all the time here, I'm in Oklahoma now, and people just give so much more alfalfa. Like some horses, like the only roughage that they get. And why would that not matter here? Or does it?
It does. And so anywhere you are, then the alfalfa, it comes into play. And so whenever I get a horse in that is getting less than 50% of their ration as alfalfa, or if they're not getting any alfalfa, then, you know, the enteroliths goes sort of to the bottom of the list. But once you go above that, it's a much higher incidence. And a lot of our alfalfa and that sort of stuff is grown in the Southwest also. So I think it's probably a little cheaper there. And so that's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. The other thing to think about in our region, I think one of the reasons we see it a little bit more commonly here than we do in Georgia, for example, is we have a lot of our aquifers are limestone. And so our water is all really hard and has tons of calcium in it. So if you live in a region where you have hard water, a water softener can actually potentially help reduce the amount of calcium your horse is intaking and then therefore the risk of enteroliths.
Oh my God, this is all just so scary. There's so much to be scared of. It's the water, it's the food, it's the world,
right,
it's all the things.
Well, yep, and it turns out you have to have water and food to live, so it's a catch 22 for sure.
That's true. Well, Dr. Dustin Major, thank you so much for coming on and explaining this. We'd love to have you back on. You're just fantastic.
Anytime.
Explaining everything. So great.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. It's kind of what I do for a living. So I get to play with horses and talk about science and people pay me money to do it. So it's a pretty good gig.
It's the best day ever right there. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Major.
You're very welcome.
Well, there you have it. Horse Radio Network has thousands of engaging podcasts for horse people, and you can have them sent right to your phone. Just subscribe via your favorite podcast player. This is Coach Jen, and I will be back again soon with another tip. Until then, go ride your horse. The Horse Radio Network and the Horse Radio Network hosts are not responsible for statements made by guests on the Horse Tip Daily. Please use your own judgment when listening to the tips on this show.